You're listening to the GAA Hour with Diarmaid Ling on Sports Joe.
Hello, hello, and welcome to The Hurling Show. We're a week away from the first Sunday in September, and we're in July. Brian Cody was talking about it again this week. Christy, welcome. We have Christy O'Connor in from Clare. Good to have you, Christy.
Great to be here, Gizzy. Thanks.
Yeah. I don't know, did you see that with Brian Cody? With a little bit of a pushback maybe for the inter-county game. Nobody really certain about July being the start of the end of the championship.
Yeah, look, at I suppose, Gizzy, it's hard to believe, I suppose, that the All-Ireland final is, you know, that season is over in 2 weeks after the football. But I suppose this stuff is relative to every county. And you look at, let's say, for example, compare Cork to Kilkenny, there's 47 more clubs in Cork than there is in the whole of Connacht. Any club championship, they don't have, it's not really a dual county, you know, like, so Cork would say they need every one of their 13, 14 weeks to get their teams ready for Munster. Like, they don't have that issue in most counties. Like, there's more clubs in some divisions in Cork than there is in some of the smaller counties. So everything is relative. I suppose it's easier for Brian to say that because of,
because Kilkenny, they don't have that.
Yeah, the games. You nearly have to assume that every county or every club is a dual club because, you know, like in Cork, 90% of the clubs are dual clubs. And I suppose I'm just using Cork as they're probably the standout example because of the size of the county. So, look, I do think, though, they could push it back by a couple of weeks.
There seems to be a little bit of a pushback, definitely. I want to bring in Dotsy, and he's sitting in here beside me. Particularly after yesterday. How was it as a dub looking at that close?
The football I wasn't in at it, but it was incredible. You could sense the atmosphere as well. I suppose, look, Dublin and Kerry, they bring out the best in each other, don't they?
Yeah.
And it's just a special rivalry. I suppose this Kerry team have been coming, and I suppose they just eventually got over the line and got that monkey off their back. So,
did you think he had it in the legs at 74, 75 minutes?
Very 76. Very impressed. I think Dublin fans were just very impressed with the response, you know, after coming, getting five or six points down and Kerry moving and in their flow, and to come back and show that resilience. And you've seen some of the older Warriors there kind of still standing up and coming good when needed. So, look, we just wanted extra time just for the drama and to continue on.
Dublin were in the ascendancy. I thought for the last 10 minutes they were in the ascendancy anyway. It looked like they were going to take it.
It did, yeah. And Kerry were, like, even, you know, some of their top players as well were having maybe, you know, uncharacteristic wides as well. And, you know, so they looked a bit rattled. And look, you know, you're a team coming like that, they just need to kind of get that step and get over the line. So it was a marvellous kick, wasn't it, at the end of the game to win a match. Like, what a phenomenal kick. And the reference in Cluxton then, 2011 as well.
I was thinking, looking at it, I was like, I don't know enough about O'Shea. Like, I don't know, he's a young fella, and you think with those kind of moments, like, it's a Cluxton, you think of Maurice Fitzgerald, you think there's a particular gravitas almost that you have to stand up to a kick like that from that distance into the hill. And it's somebody who's already done it a few times, but for a young fella, it was further back
it was further back as well. Like, it was a fair distance out now as well, beyond the 45 against the wind and into the hill as well.
It was all
I seen Evan Comerford, the keeper, was rocking the post as well.
He had played every trick in the book already.
Look, a phenomenal kick, and I suppose worthy of kind of winning the contest right at the end. But it's a huge step for Kerry. But I mean, Dublin, you'd have to admire the resilience and the you know, probably unlucky not to push it on to extra time. But I suppose there wasn't huge complaints. Kerry, maybe, you know, were good throughout the game as well. And, you know, I suppose, look, they've got that monkey off their back now.
Yeah, for sure. We're here for the main event. I mean, semi-finals are one thing, but we're looking forward to an Ireland final at the weekend.
Absolutely.
Christy, I suppose, you don't have the impartiality you would have had if Clare had made it to the final. There's so many different avenues, but we've got Limerick looking for. One of the things, actually, I saw it during the week, and I'm not sure where. This idea of going for a three in a row and the talk, and I know James was stoking fires here a couple of weeks ago saying that he wasn't sure if it was a true legacy until the Becky Kenny in an Ireland final. I'm not sure how much water that holds, but there is something about legacy and the possibility of the legacy, maybe like Kilkenny for a five in a row, that takes away from the present moment of the game and can, if you're focused on this much bigger picture that's more long-standing, you kind of maybe takes away from the first 5 minutes, which is crucial, you know, as crucial as the last 5 minutes. So I wonder, is it a potential challenge for Limerick?
Sure, look at Gizzy, like we say, for a county traditionally or historically compared to Kilkenny, like I suppose it's just a massive, massive, you know, scenario for Limerick to be in, that they're in that conversation, like that they're not just even, you know, like there's comparisons and early in the game as well, like about that, you know, even go back when they won in 2020, like that with their physical profile, with their, I suppose, age profile, with their class, with their coaching setup, their management setup, like they were already being compared, you know, have the potential to get to that level back even 2 years ago. Now they're very much in the conversation. If they win on Sunday, it's 3 in 4 years, 3 in a row. Like, and you have to place this in the historical context of where Limerick were, you know, traditionally, like they won 3 All-Irelands in the, say, between 34 and 40. And, you know, that was kind of a mythical team, Mick Mackey. And, you know, that was 3 All-Irelands in 7 years. Like, these boys are looking for, you know what I mean? They're looking for 3 in a row now and 4 and 5. Like, so this just puts them on a whole different scale. And if you go back to, you know, go right through the history, like, you know, where you've had, you know, Clare won 2 in 95, 97. You know, like this doesn't happen. Like, you know, like, okay, Cork will win their batch of All-Irelands when they were winning them. Tip, Kilkenny, like, okay, Wexford even back in you know, the 50s. And they're a kind of
we're getting into it now, by back to the team, like, you know, back to the 50s, by 55, 56, 60. But they were in, throughout that. And they were coming from the same lack, I suppose. Like, Wexford had been a football county probably up until 42, 43, and then, you know, as Nicky Rackard came onto the scene directly at that time, they kind of got back up at the senior, and they were and then they changed the fortunes in the same scale that you're talking about with Limerick, because they're coming from almost no All-Irelands to now being part of a legacy that very few teams have achieved.
But I think if you throw in the facts here that, like, I know we were talking about these fantastic teams as well, like, some of them teams won 3 or 4 games to win an All-Ireland as well. So, like, if you take in the modern system there, and the round robin, and the, you know, the I suppose the reserved Limerick are having to show to win these All-Irelands as well, and I think they're unbeaten in 15 games, or, you know, so
yeah, it is, it's true. But does it make it a little bit easier playing that amount of games where there's no, we don't have direct knockout? Like, that's where winning in Ireland in a direct knockout can maybe be more difficult. Now, they've stood the test, 15 games unbeaten or whatever it is. Like that speaks its own volumes.
I suppose we were just talking earlier, I was saying, like, the Kilkenny team, maybe that great, obviously ultra-talented team as well, but I suppose we're just looking, maybe they were kind of cruising into All-Ireland semi-finals for a long time. Like, there wasn't much resistance from, say, in Leinster, you know, Dublin, Offaly, Wexford weren't putting up much.
You can get away with saying
well,
that.
Let's be honest about it. Let's be honest. Were kind of, but I mean, you heard Brian Cody talking about enjoying that, or you hear even some of the former players enjoying that talking about the gap there into the semi-final, that they really embraced that as well. So, like, you know, Brian Cody is used to that as well. But I mean, you know, that Kilkenny team had no issue kind of peaking or you know, without being so-called tested or whatever, they could get it right themselves to be ready for semi-final as well. So it's not to take away from that. You know what I mean?
Christy, you were talking about maybe a couple of chinks in the armour, and I was wondering, definitely in the context of Clare, maybe less so in some respects with Waterford as well, the timing in the season and how we've seen teams, you know, turning, you know, going over the hill in the middle of the season, where you have a Kilkenny who are kind of, who start to come good at this time of year, generally, you know, generally they get that right. Do you see with Limerick, I felt against Galway, they were showing signs of, like, I didn't think Galway were lighting it up in the first half, and yet Limerick weren't, they were reticent. There was something reticent in their play that I haven't seen before. Are you any more convinced after the semi-final that there are some chinks, or are they responding to every question that's been asked of them and thus improving?
Yeah, well, great question, Gizzy. Like, I suppose there's a number of different elements to that answer, to the answer, and I suppose Dotsie has touched on it there. We'll say, you go back to last year, like, Limerick won, they played 4 games to win the All-Ireland. Like, you know, they're on the road now a long time. like there's definite chinks there. They're definitely leaking gas, and that's not in any way a criticism. That's just hard facts. Like, and you know, you look at that the last day four, they're starting six forwards taken off. You know, they've had to go to the well a lot. You know, go to extra time in the Munster final. And you know, I suppose it's just as well that they've that attrition that teams are studying them more, and they're just probably just not in that form. But I suppose the sign of how great they really are is that they're finding a way to win, because like there's no doubt about it. Like they were there for the taking with 50 minutes to go against Galway. Galway just needed to get two or three scores ahead, just couldn't get them ahead. And if you look at the third quarter of that game, lads, like it was Dermot Burns really who kept them in that game. Like it was, yeah. He got three of the first four scores. Like, you know, Galway came out, wiped out that 4-point deficit. And it was literally Burns that was keeping him in the game with his free take, and he's a phenomenon. So like, you know, I just felt with Galway that, okay, the chance was there. Okay, like you're not going to get away with like double digits wide against Limerick, but 19 is just stretching it too much. You're not going to survive that. But the true sign of their greatness is they're just different guys are coming up. Like, and it was their defence the last day. You'd have to say Sean Finn was incredible. Barry Nash for me is in the running for hurler of the year. He's been absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And the other part of it, that answer too, Gizzy, is like this is the first time really that they've had serious injuries in their 4 or 5 year campaign. Like that they've lost Keane Lynch. He's effectively had one game this year. Peter Casey obviously didn't play after damaging his cruciate last year in the All-Ireland. They've had to deal with this stuff that they didn't really have to deal with in other years. So, and this is just a legacy. This is just the reality of when you're on the road that long and, yeah, you know, yeah. You're...
The like, cracks are going to appear.
Well, the other point Gizzy or Dotsie made as well, which is very, very pertinent, and it's very fair, and it's not in any way a criticism of the teams in Leinster, but like back in when Kilkenny were at their peak, their attitude was, we've got to get it right for two games in August, September, and we're All-Ireland champions, because they could just get through Leinster. And they had that. Like if you look at, we'll say, the record of Munster teams in the All-Ireland semi-finals when there's been a four-week layoff or longer, like the numbers are horrendous. I think it was four wins in 15 seasons in, you know, between, I think, 02 and we'll say, 19. Limerick fell at that hurling 19. And they struggled the last day to get over that as well. Whereas Kilkenny, like, you know, I remember Eddie Brennan telling me one time that they just used to do the exact same thing every year between that 4 week break. They'd go back to the clubs, or if it was a 5 week break, they'd come in, they'd do the same training or the same kind of format. They'd go on a training camp. It was almost like, you know, repeat what we did last year. And they just had it so right. And I think, you know, the point with Kilkenny is, you know, people often say, well, games will bring you on. But like Kilkenny's attitude has always been, well, look, they nearly prefer to have training sessions and to be together in Nolan Park and to test themselves in Nolan Park. And there was the soundings coming out of Nolan Park before the Clare game that they were so happy with how things were going. They were almost even taken aback with how well it was going. I think Cody even felt that they were going as well coming into that All-Ireland semi-final as they were at any stage when they were at their prime. So...
There was a lot of references towards it, wasn't there? Even after the game, directly after the game, they were all touching on it, like so.
I'm wondering with that. Sorry, Christy. With when they come out of those training, that 4 week block, and they're different to other teams who seem to want practice matches and they want to, you know, they want to play games. I think games at that stage, whereas Cody just seems to want to get them into Nolan Park. Are they better suited? Are Kilkenny kind of weakened coming into the All-Ireland final in the fact that they have almost kind of peaked for their semi-final? Now, it's not to say that they've peaked, but cat's out of the bag. Nobody really expected too much out of them based on the Leinster campaign. And they've come out now and it's all of a sudden, you know, the cats are purring. Like they've come out of the blocks and it's the training weeks and everything is right again in the camp. If they had the All-Ireland final,
I don't think people expected them to be that convincing.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe there's elements of Clare were a bit off. They were shown maybe against Wexford as well that they were.
Yeah.
They had dipped after their Munster campaign as well, but in regards to their hurling and you know as Christy's talking about the talk about the 4 week, like they looked razor sharp, didn't they? Their touch, their everything, their hurling, their skill levels, their link up play, and you know they were just in that great space. So as you said, look, it's the cat out of the bag. We know they're all brilliant hurlers, but certainly they've kind of opened that up now and you know, Limerick are going to be aware of their strengths there. And but on the other side of that, like Kilkenny, they were under huge pressure after, like, Brian Cody's record previous to the last 2 years, I think, is incredible with All-Ireland semi-finals.
Yeah.
You know, so they lost the last two. So for that group, it was crucial to get over that. So they've gotten over that. I think their confidence levels must be sky high. So I'd expect them to come in and certainly perform again. You know, yeah. I think they will perform, and they, like, I don't think that'll be, they mightn't get to that level. I don't think they'll be allowed to get to that level, and I don't think they'll be allowed, you know, stamp their authority all over the game like they did early against Clare. Like, that's, I can't see that happening against Limerick, even if Limerick aren't in full flow or on full song. I think physically, even they won't allow that to happen. So, look, on the flip side, you know, Limerick are kind of, you know, there are a few lads maybe who underperformed. So you could argue that, you know, intercounty hurlers rarely want to go out two games on the bounce and not perform. Yeah. So, you know, they have a good few guys who are, you know, they will certainly want to step up from their semi-final display. You know?
It may be a midfield half-back question, Christy, which I'll let with you in a second. But from a forwards perspective, Dotsie, do you see, because that was the thing with, it wasn't Galway inaccuracy, it was Galway shot selection is what was poorest, and that's where they were making their mistakes. You know, some of them are going to go over some days, you know, the ones that are on the edge, or if you're leaning back a little bit. Yeah. Do you see in Kilkenny, Billy Ryan on Cody, King Kenny, Martin Keown, do you see the quality to take the right option in those situations when they're going to be meeting, like, you know, the tidiest full back line in the game?
Yeah, look, I think Kilkenny are ruthless in that aspect of the game, and decision making and stuff. I think they can get to that level. You've seen what TJ Reid is, kind of the ability there. He might have lost a little bit of pace or whatever, but the brain is, you know, is the one of the most active in the hurling world, you know, and he just makes things happen. So if he's winning primary possession, he knows the peripheral vision there to pop it out to lads who are in an ideal position to pop a score or just win a free, hold on to the ball, look around. They're very good at that. I seen them in Parnell Park. I know they were up against Dublin, and the link-up play some of the times, like, you know, the willingness just to pick the player in the better position and just know when that right shot is on.
Yeah.
So I think they have that. I think they have that more than most teams. And I think they have that selflessness where they'll work it to the man in the best position, you know?
Yeah, invariably, like almost 100% of the time they give it to the man in the best position. They always just seem to find that that's the smarts of that traditional game that they play. It's just they do the right thing all of the time. Christy, it can also be a question with the way the modern game is played for the 65 back. It's what's done when the ball is kind of recycled out. Do you see Kilkenny when it is, like, I suppose I have doubts about TJ Reid in some respects. I know he was feated after the semi-final and rightfully so. I mean, one part of that is just his razor sharp certainty on frees, and it was a week where the top free takers maybe weren't performing. He can win primary possession, but you take away the primary possession, which you might well have to do against Limerick, because there's not many people. You're always going to win one or two, but you're not going to take too many from that Limerick half back line. Is TJ under a little bit more pressure then?
He is, Gizzy, in that regard, but, like, I wouldn't agree with you there, what you said about his semi-final. Like, he was, like, if you go through his, break it down, his numbers, and just break down what he did in that game. We'd say in the first half, like, he'd 1 point, he'd 4 assists. Like, it was a bit of a mismatch in the air. You know, like, and I don't think you can discount his free taking. If you there was one free in the Leinster final, which he went to Hawkeye, and the Hawkeye data wasn't available. That's another, nearly another show in itself. But
I think that one was wired, yeah.
But, oh, don't talk. Like, go on.
So like that, he said the Hawkeye data was unavailable. So if you, let's say, if you say that ball was over, that meant he slotted 20 of his last 20 frees, or 20 of his last 20 placed balls, which is absolutely off the
charts. Unbelievable, yeah.
And if you look at some of those in the Leinster final and in the Clare game, like, they were not easy frees. Like, no. back to pitch. And if you go back to his second half performance against Clare, like, he and this was an issue for him in the Leinster final as well, where he went over 23 minutes without getting his hands on the ball. I think he went nearly the guts of half an hour without getting his hands on the ball in the second half against Clare. He was involved in kind of winning a free, kind of hunting around the break, and then 3 shots in the last couple of minutes, 2 scores. But it's just he takes watching. I think what they might do with him, right, and, you know, now there's maybe a bit of a misconception around Mikey Casey, like that, you know, because of that goal the last day from Brian Concannon, and he just got lost a little bit. And like, I suppose Galway went after Mikey Casey in the air with Johnny Glynn in the 2018 final, and it didn't work. And now a lot of that was down to the ball that went in. But like, Mikey Casey, he's a good player. He's a survivor. But like, whether they'll put TJ in there, like, I suppose there was a feeling after the before the Clare game that, given the goals Clare conceded to Wexford, that they'd maybe lower the full forward line with TJ and Walter Walsh, and maybe pump ball in there. They didn't have to do that because they had such control of the game early. But I wouldn't be surprised to see TJ in there early. And it just takes a different, like you saw with Galway, their shot selection was poor, Gizzy, but they obviously had made a decision that they were going to take their chances. They were going to shoot from distance. They were going to try and just avoid that, you know, that pack around the middle, and then set up well on the puck out. And look at that. To be honest with you, it nearly worked. You know, you have to have a very defined game plan going in against Limerick. Like, you know, we've seen this throughout the championship. There's definitely been a return to more old school values in terms of, you know, manning up a bit more, winning your own 50-50 balls, your own 50-50 duels. Like, you know, we saw that from the first day of the championship when Cork just tried to run the ball through that swarm against Limerick in the middle third.
Yeah.
It does not work, didn't work. Like, Clare, the one team, I suppose, that have matched up, we'll say the two teams that have matched up to Limerick are Clare and Galway, because they're physically able to take them on. Limerick cannot bully those teams like they can, you know, to other sides. You know, that they can physically survive in the tackle. And you saw that even yesterday with Kerry in Dublin, where the Kerry lads were able to survive that heat and get away from that tackle that they wouldn't have been able to do maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, Clare were able to do that against Limerick. Galway were able to do it. And Kilkenny will be able to do it. Like, maybe not at the same level in some with some of their players, some of their younger players, but you know, you have to be able to physically match up to them. And when you go back to the last time Limerick were beaten, they were just literally, Kilkenny just savaged them. That was the bottom line. Now,
yeah,
Limerick are much more prepared, much better conditioned to deal with that now. But yeah, look, it's going to be fascinating stuff.
And like, that's the point, I suppose, with TJ, and it's definitely a difficult line to walk, because you're asking questions of one of the great players that's ever played the game. But with Aaron Galan, for example, he got two goals against Cork in at the back. And then there was this question of, like, you know, isolate Aaron Galan, get a high ball in because he's very strong in the air. And then, as you're saying there with Mike Casey, maybe there's a possibility, you know, that he got caught out too far in front, and he's playing that game from the front. So there's a possibility of putting TJ in and winning high balls. That's potentially one possibility. Where, I suppose, the question I'm asking is exactly in that situation, ideally, if you've then got Mike Casey asking, second guessing himself, saying, right, I need to hold back. If you have a forward in at that stage, like an Aaron Galan, who can then play in front and use his speed in front because he's taking advantage of the full back who's asking questions of himself, kind of making sure to mind the goal a little bit more. Ideally, then, if you'd a speedster, he can change the game up. Whereas TJ at this stage of his career can't change it up in that way, I don't think, because he doesn't have the gears to beat Mike Casey in that way. That's the only. I wouldn't discount the freeze. I wouldn't discount his contribution. I'm just wondering, with half back line, if I don't think he's going to win the same ball in the half against that Limerick half back line. So if you use him in the full forward line and you have Mike Casey more aware, he can't exploit the possibility of the space that might be in front of him.
Who are you putting in?
Yes, yeah. Maybe that question. That's...
Well, yeah, Christy, you might be better qualified to answer.
I suppose the thing about it is, I suppose, like, Limerick, you know, I suppose they can dictate who they're marking as well, you know. So I don't think they'll want to draw Mike Casey out of there anyway. But it'll be interesting to see. Kind of.
I think you want TJ out in the play. I'm just looking like, yeah, I don't know. But I suppose,
look at the bottom line is, you know, like, there's no question about, I suppose, one of Limerick's greatest strengths is, you know, how they adapt. And you could see that the last day, how they manage the game. And that, a lot of that comes from Kinnerk. And I suppose if you look at Kilkenny's history in All-Ireland finals, lads, they've always, even though it was always kind of maybe fired at them, that, you know, they're traditional, that they don't really go for tactics. I never felt that was the case. And they always tried something different. They always really tried to identify, you know, a matchup or some guy that, you know, that they would have targeted.
Christy, absolutely. I totally agree as well. And so, like, the way that the team has been changing so much throughout this year as well, like, he hasn't been afraid to do it from game to game. So it'll be interesting to see, like, that forward line, you know, where will they start? Like, he will change it around, I'd imagine, as you're touching on there. And it'll be intriguing to see where, like, they'll try to just upset Limerick as much as they can by moving lads around. So I think what you're saying is bang on. They'll definitely what it is, I don't know, but I'd say they'll come up with something all right.
Big time. Yeah,
well, it's amazing too, because I suppose you could hypothesize about where they'll go and what they'll do. But as James has said, and it's been said often enough, it depends on these 2 weeks. Like, it depends on how the last 6 weeks of games have gone, who's showing form. That's what Brian Cody seems to be absolutely unwavering in, is his commitment to, if you're playing well, and if you're playing well in a certain position, or he sees a role for you, you'll go in, whether you've got 5 games played or 50 games played. It doesn't seem to matter. It's what suits him. I'm wondering, I suppose Mikey Butler was kind of ideal to tail Tony Kelly in terms of his physicality and his keenness and his athleticism. That was a good fit, but I don't see him as good a fit for an Aaron Gillan, for example. I don't think Graham Mulcahy will start this time round, but I wonder what they'll do with Mikey. How do you see him lining up at the back, Christy?
Yeah, I'd say what they'll do is they'll trust Hugh Lawler on Gillan. They just look at, you know, I think that's one thing that was missed a lot from the last day, like, that everyone was lauding Mikey, and rightly so, for how he played on Tony. But, like, Hugh Lawler was outstanding, like, imperious in the year, and he has been all year. And I think if you go back to right throughout the league, even, I don't know if you're at that game in Parnell Park in the league, Dotsie, like, but Mikey Butler and Hugh Lawler were two of Dublin's best players that night. They were excellent. You know, and like, but to go back, just to change it around a bit, I was actually looking at this morning, and like, it just proved again that Limerick are the most predictable team in the country by an absolute mile. Everybody knows exactly what they're going to do. And if you look at just around Gillan, since you brought him up, if you look at his first two scores in the Galway game, early scores, right? First on short puck out, Nicky out to Sean Finn, Dara Donovan on the 45, kind of not a crossfield ball, a kind of a ball down the sideline. Gillan comes out in front of Jack Grealish, snaps, wins the ball, turns over the bar, right? Second score, Barry Nash comes out, Dara Donovan, crossfield ball. Gillan was more central, so got the ball, had the luxury to turn on his right, on Doughy, over the bar. And if you look at Dara Donovan, without doubt, the most underrated striker, ball deliverer in the country, because I'd say Limerick inside forwards just love to see him in possession, because he'll just pop that ball, one bounce into their hand. And like, it's all down to pattern recognition and how they play and how well they're coached. And like, it's so predictable. Like, they'll do is they'll work it short, they'll work it through the platform, and then it's either that crossfield ball to Gillan or to Flanagan, either side of the D. And everybody knows what they're going to do. Like, they've seen it a million times.
Just how
times.
You stop it.
Exactly. How do you stop it? So, like, you know, and I don't think Kilkenny will get overly hung up on that stuff. Like, you could make an argument, well, do you mark on the outside? Like, do you mark Gillan on the outside? But then you saw it against Tip. You know, you put the ball in, if Hugh Lawler isn't on him, you put the ball in and around the square, he attacks it from behind, he snaps it over the air and it's in the net. So,
but like, where it's been most effective is the press, isn't it? Like, that's what Kilkenny, it's the press on the two or four out, you know, out half back line at some stage. But that's Limerick's great benefit, is they're almost what you'd say is a sweeper. The man in the pocket is actually their midfielder who's coming back as the kind of link, and they create a little bit of space for him to play the ball in. But if they're pressed hard enough, then it's the quality of ball, it's how to stop the quality ball going in, because once Gillan gets the quality ball, there just doesn't seem to be any stopping him.
Yeah, but absolutely. And you even saw, but like, but the way they can mix it up too, if you go back to the point that Gillan got, say they were a point down, I think 63rd minute, 62nd minute, and like, it was a sharp puck to Sean Finn. Sean Finn, you know, identified Gillan, he starts that run, his favourite run, he's starting points on the square, you know, he takes off out to attacks the space, they clear it out, and Sean Finn identified it straight away, like, got it over the Limerick cover, the Galway half back line cover. It's obviously the ball is kicking off that turf, Gillan comes out, unbelievable touch. Doughy left a bit in there with the hurley. You know, ball spins up, takes it. Or, like, turns inside over the bar. Like you're saying, how do you stop this guy? Mm. But I suppose to go back to your original point, Gizzy, is it doesn't matter. Kilkenny's philosophy, and Dotsy would have seen this a million times playing against them with Dublin, is like they just absolutely want to, you know, eat you alive in the middle third and just stop that supply going in. And just look, it takes incredible work rate, but I think the difference between Kilkenny now and maybe back then and now is they're playing against a crowd that they're just masters of this stuff, of breaking tackles, of, you know, finding those pockets, identifying those gaps. You know, they like, you see the way Hannon will dink it short. You know, Kyle Hayes was back there, he was such a phenomenon. He was nearly more of a threat as a wing back as he was as a half forward, because he could identify gaps and attack them and eat up that space with his pace. Burns then has that ability to just spray it long, you know, and to score from distance. So, like, and Limerick are definitely more developed, more advanced, and a much better, I suppose, all-round team than they were in 2019 when they were last beaten. But I suppose the question now is, like, have they the gas in the tank? Have they, you know, the fuel there to just drive them over the line? Because if that's their lads, and if they perform, there's no question they'll win the game. But I still think, right, they're going to have to play they're going to have to play really well. If Kilkenny play, you know, discard Clare's performance, okay, they just didn't play well. Clare were just physically and mentally spent after the Munster final. But if Kilkenny play as well as they played in the Clare game, it's going to take a serious performance from Limerick to beat them.
Yeah.
I just think that the points you're touching on are bang on there. And I just think Lawler, potentially on Galan, I think that's taken. If he's solely focused on that job as well, I think there could be an opening there in regards to Limerick from a full forward line perspective. You know, you could be having match like Seamus Flanagan, or, you know, potentially, I know Kyle Hayes has come back out to centre forward, but imagine if them boys are inside on, say,
Deegan will be physically.
And the thing about Kilkenny is they don't mind chopping the lads around and playing them in different positions.
Yeah.
He trusts that. Same with the forwards. He'll trust that, as in he can mix them around or whatever. But, like, you can get Flanagan in there. So, I'm just saying, if there was matchups potentially of Mikey Butler or Tommy Walsh,
yeah,
you know, he's not. They're having great seasons, but they're not exactly huge men either.
No.
So if you were getting kind of Hayes in there, if you were getting, you know, who has played full forward, if you were getting Seamus Flanagan in there,
yeah,
you know, like there is, and even if these boys are out, if they're drawn out, they're on, like, you're talking like big wing forward Morrissey, yeah, or Gerard Hegarty. So going back to what Christy's talking about, as in that the strength and stuff, I think they'll have a bit of an edge overall in regards to that side of the game. Now, they'll still have to match the ultimate aggression and intensity that they're going to be hit with, and they're still going to have to perform, but I think they can gain edges there. And as you said, I think maybe they might go without Graham Mulcahy. He would suit one of them boys down to the ground.
Yeah.
Whereas something else could cause a lot of bother, I would think.
But this is the thing, and Christy was raising it there, the predictability. I suppose it's a very effective style of management to say, this is our style and we're going to worry about perfecting our style and we're not going to worry about the opposition as much. I think Kilkenny, the old adage of not having tactics, that grows over a year. They respond to how the game develops in a year. They don't, at the start of the year, they're not quite maybe there, but then by the time the year comes on and Cody starts to work his magic, then they start playing a particular way. And it was lovely patches in the game against Clare where they were playing the ball out and playing off the shoulder, and they were playing anybody else's, you know, the game that has developed as it has. But Galan, we'll say Mulcahy, depending on what way they line out, obviously, Will they play a Tom Morrissey or a Gerard Hegarty? Would they put them in corner forward? Like, they tend, he seems to say, but that doesn't suit our system. Our system is Hegarty's on the wing, and that is a potential weakness that you're unwilling to kind of move with what the unfolding conditions are. I don't know.
Hayes is another option to just horse in, who's played full forward, you know? So, like, I mean, there's no one, are them boys going to catch a ball over his head? I wouldn't think, like, you know, and the big thing is, like, they imposed their game on Clare so early. Like, you could sense it in the first couple of minutes, Christy, there, where you kind of, you knew that they were getting on top, and they were, you know, coming out with the ball, and it was lifting the whole team. They can't, like, Limerick, you know, I just think Limerick could get a massive, massive, I think if they can create uncomfortable matchups there, they could potentially, you know, whatever about their system of play, I think just a general ball being pumped in even could cause a lot of problems. We've seen a few high balls, even referencing the football, the odd high ball going in, and how much carnage that can create. So if lads have physical, if they can have a big, you know, big edge on their opponent there as well, you wouldn't know what would come off it as well. So as you said, they like sticking rigidly to their systems, but sure, you know, maybe they might throw something different in as well, you know.
Do you see anything from Cody, Christy, any potential curveballs thrown in?
No, like, just to go back to the point that he made earlier on about, you know, how much he's shaken up their forward line this year. Like, it's been incredible. Like, it goes back to Cody's mantra and his philosophy, which he's always held, where he said he never cares about a settled team. He just focuses on a settled spirit. And if you would say, you looked at the last day Pádraig Walsh started, hadn't really played much. You know, like, and I do think that the big thing with Kilkenny in the last couple of years, right, is like the 2020 semi-final was a turning point in terms of, you know, they just looked to be no pace in that Kilkenny team at the time.
Yeah.
You know, they were like, Waterford just ran them off the pitch in the second half of that game. And like a couple of the guys they brought in, like Mikey Carey, you know, Connor Brown, like these guys are very athletic. They have good pace. Like, they bring a different range around the pitch, which Kilkenny have lacked. And then the other thing is like that they have guys that, you know, like Mullen is in serious form. Like Owen Cody, like in the first half, was incredible. Like, his first score he got was off the charts. Could have had a goal. And you know, let's say like TJ bangs in an early goal. Cody gets a goal. You know, Mullen is burning it up. Like, this is something that Limerick haven't really faced. Like, okay, they faced it in patches against Clare, we'll say, when Tony was just ripping it to shreds. But you know, if Kilkenny have these guys that can come up, like Walter Walsh, like, you know, I suppose Cody has him exactly where he wants him now. Brought him on the last day, set up Kilkenny's goal. Like, I'm sure he was absolutely going crazy in training, trying to prove a point the last couple of weeks. Like, you know, will he target Walter Walsh inside full forward? Like, it's impossible to know, because, you know, everything with Cody is based on,
yeah, you have to be the training
form. Unlike other counties, I suppose, yeah, that he's always placed so much store and so much faith in that model. So, yeah, like, look, I think that they're you know, even Kilkenny the last day, excellent match. Like, you know, was even early on when he wasn't really in the game, he was fouled for two frees. So, like, they're in so much, like, they, when you look at them in Leinster, where they were, I suppose, look at, they were just struggling for the form they've hit now. But look, it goes back to the point, lads, we were talking about earlier on, where this is the time of the year they got to get it right. And, you know, they look like they've got it right at the right time. And, you know, maybe Limerick, it's like, I would fancy Limerick, no question. But I think Limerick are going to have to play really, really well to beat them. And if they don't play well, I Kilkenny will beat them.
Yeah, I would agree. I wonder how Brian Cody was taking in the last week's events and how happy he was that the JP Pro-Am in Adair Manor was the week before the All-Ireland final, and he saw Gerard Hegarty and the boys chatting with Tiger Woods, and
I'd say he loved it.
I'd say he loved it. Yeah. There's something that suits Brian Cody's mentality for him looking at the game, like for how you think things, for how things bend to his will in the game, to see images like that. Now, they count for nothing in some respects, but energetically, there's something there that seems to, just the time, just coming up, I was thinking about the timing of that. It's an amazing, amazing time, and it's Bill Murray, and there's this whole kind of celebrity kind of a side to the game that he has no respect for whatsoever, and just the timing of it was really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. But I suppose, look, Limerick kind of, they have their own special unique thing going on, don't they? And that's all been a part of it as well. And
it has,
and
they're outspoken in it. They're not shy about it.
No, they are, and they step up to that. And I mean, they're all great, you know, let's be honest, they're all like top guys, top sports people as well. So
yeah,
I don't think it'll be, you know, I know what you mean. Like, yeah, I don't think it'll be on the dressing room wall or anything like that. But I think this crop of Limerick players, I think they've kind of, I think they have that maturity and stuff that they're, look, they've proven it over the last number of years. And, you know, I don't think there's no distractions at this stage with them as well. They'll be good enough or they won't be good enough on the day, you know. Now, going back to Christy, I probably would be tipping them as well.
Yeah.
But they'll have to perform, like, they'll have to earn it, and I don't think they'll stutter along like they, you know, potentially did in the semi-final.
Yeah.
Because Kilkenny now, they've hit that confidence levels, and I think they'll come I think they're going to give a big, big, big performance as well. Yeah. So I just think Limerick, yeah, I think they'll have to, as I said, a lot of lads maybe underperforming as well will want to, you know, look, you can't just turn it on like a tap, but I suppose they've good memories of playing and all that. Even last year, they produced so well on the big day as well. Yeah. So they have that in the locker, fresh from 12 months ago as well. So I think they can call upon all their recent success as well, and
yeah,
you know, I don't think they've ran out of gas just yet, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder, similar to what you were saying about the Dublin Kerry game yesterday, they seem to bring the best out of themselves and out of each other. And I wonder, yeah, is that ideally? I mean, that's what as neutrals, that's what we're looking at for the final. We're looking at, you know, the setup of the three in a row, and you have to take on Kilkenny to win it, and it's Kilkenny hitting form and Brian Cody spitting in the hands, and you can see he's ready for the battle, and then Limerick have to bring out this one last huge performance, and then they both combine to produce something that's greater than the sum of its parts, you know, like that's the ideal out of the final. We're all looking for.
I think it'll live up to that. I hope so anyway, because I just think they're, as you say, you described it well there, you know. So yeah. I just think that step for Kilkenny now will have them absolutely.
Yeah.
And let's be honest about it, you're walking, you know, you're Kilkenny hurler, you're walking down the street with like whatever amount of Leinster titles, you know. It's not. It doesn't count down there, does
no,
it? So
no, no.
A lot of these boys haven't got their hands on an All Ireland medal, you know. And the longer that goes on, the harder that is as well. So they will be absolutely like, you know, they're gonna come out.
Oh, it's a neutral's dream. Somehow there's something still. Yeah, there's a desire of some sort or a fondness still for that first that relentlessness that Kilkenny have shown over the years. Their ability to just get back at this time of year, it just never. And I do. I've always been definitely a huge fan of the Brian Cody philosophy. It might come hard edged at times, but there's definitely something beautifully pure about it. There's plenty of points that you both agree on. I'm just wondering about a joint ticket for a Dublin job that's come up during the week. Matty Kenny is. Step down. Where you?
I heard Christie's putting his name in the hat there.
Well, he might need some inside information as well. That's, you know, you're big in the performance game as well. So I don't know what, like, with Matty, or just it was time to go and.
I don't. Yeah, I suppose he had done 4 years. I suppose there was kind of, you know, it was his year four, and I suppose what was very disappointing one was the Kilkenny one. Like, there was a home in Parnell Park, and you know, it was just such a disappointing display.
Yeah.
And like to go down by 17 points, you know.
Yeah.
And then I suppose there wasn't really, you know, they needed. Look, in fairness, Matty was unlucky this year because we're short a few forwards, and there was a couple of forwards, and there is a couple of forwards there who were injured, and, you know, they were basically season enders. He was up against it in that regard. But it was just disappointing, maybe the manner of it as well. And then that led into the Galway game, which they kind of. You know, it was in their own hands, effectively, to stay in the championship. There was that risk that Wexford would beat Kilkenny, and that obviously proved then that Dublin were gone. So,
fine lines.
Yeah, it is. It is fine lines. I suppose, look, I don't know, the county board maybe, they're going to be on the lookout now, obviously. And
Christy, do you see anybody putting a hand up?
Sure, look, it's a very attractive job, Gizzy, like, in terms of, you know, there's still a lot of talent there. There's still a lot of good young players coming. Like, I just felt with Matty, like, it probably had. Look, he was there 4 years. It had become a bit stale. Looked like it had gone a bit stale. Like, I was in Galway that night when Galway beat them in the last round robin game, and just very, very disappointing second half performance. And they just look at they to me like that they, you know, they went down to Wexford. Was at that game. Like, they played some good stuff. Wexford probably had a few chances that night. They didn't take, which cost them, but like that was a super win down there, and they had the group really in their hands. And then, like, you know, like when you get beaten by 17 points in a round robin game, like, it's effectively like losing 3 points because your score difference takes such a hammering. And like, they still went to Galway, like, you know, Wexford did them the favour. They beat Kilkenny, you know, they effectively could have knocked Kilkenny out of the championship. Kilkenny could have been gone that night if Dublin had won, but like they faded away. You know, really very poorly in the second half that night in Pure Stadium. And even I thought the body language even afterwards, like, you know, that there was still the Wexford Kilkenny game was still going on.
Yeah.
You know, but there was no, it was nearly an acceptance that, yeah, look, it doesn't matter. We're gone out of the championship. And like, I think really that when Matty looks back on his time, I think, you know, that the real, real regret will be like the 19 game against Laois, where they, you know, I was in Parnell Park that night. They beat Galway. It was unbelievable night for Dublin. Like, you know, they were so, like, you know, okay, could have been the Leinster final. You know, there was such a really, such a massive buzz around the place that night. And, you know, look, at Laois deserved to beat them in Port Laois in the prelim quarter final. Probably maybe Dublin took the rye off the ball. You know, then to 2020, you know, lost Kilkenny, like, we're way down early on. Lost to Cork. Like, last year they had a brilliant win against Galway. You know, Galway were just poor last year. The COVID issue in the Leinster final didn't help them. Beaten by Cork in the quarter final. So, like, I really think when they look back, 19 will be a massive, massive regret. Yeah. Because
I think on your last game of the year, though, I think you always want to see the team maybe dying with their boots on. Do you know? Yeah. And I suppose the last couple of years, even like they lost to Cork maybe two of the games as well, and they were in the game, but they weren't really. Do you know? Yeah. So. Like, I suppose you'd like to see them maybe going out on their, you know,
sword. I think with that was potentially a platform game for them to drive on. I think what Christy's highlighting with the Laois one as well. But look at lads, that's all we have time for. I suppose we'll see. There'll be the week will unfold, and we'll have plenty of opinions and ideas as to what's going to happen. We'll all know on Monday how we're reading the game, and we'll have all Ireland champions to digest and to look back at the year as well. So look at, thanks very much for your time. Paul Flanagan is going to join us here in studio, is going to join us on the line. Thanks very much, Christy, for coming in, and Dotsy for coming into studio as well.
All right, Gizzy.
Paul, how are you doing?
I'm good, Dermot. Not a bother now.
Tell me where in the world you are.
I'm in your neck of the woods now. Last couple of days, so yeah, I popped down to Dingle here yesterday, got the football in the lovely people of Ganey's pub looked after us and headed down to Dick Max for the extras. So it's been nice, you know. It's beautiful couple of days. Obviously, you're well used to this part of the world, but it's a change of scene for me, which is nice.
Yeah, it's easy to understand how you get stuck down there, isn't it? Paul, there's so many things that I want to chat to you about. I mean, I know you from a kind of a young upstart in some respects, coming in with TG Cahir in your earlier days, and to where you are now, and reading a lot more about the journey along the way. And I know that with Niall and the Ard School, with Niall Moore and the Ard School, and the direction that you've taken, your studiousness of the game, but also your releasing of tensions around your own game. Can you give me how has that journey been for you?
Yeah, it's definitely been the road less travelled, for sure. Gizzy, like when I look at it overall, I suppose as a younger player, we were brought onto a senior setup. And we were at a very young age. Like, there's no denying that we were 19, 20 years of age, been brought into a senior setup. We had a couple of under 21 All-Irelands behind us. And we were quite young and still had to figure out the world and still figure out ourselves. And we're probably trying to perform on the biggest stage. And to be honest, I found it really difficult. I probably wasn't and still wouldn't consider myself to be, a shining light of a hurler, or the best hurler on the field by any stretch of the imagination. You know, there's brilliant players around me. And look, I don't have to look too far, even in my own club, to find that.
Tough going when you've got, like, Tony Griffin is your maybe a bit of a legacy, and you've got Tony Kelly beside you.
Yeah. Tony Griffin actually texted me today. He was like, make sure and tell Gizzy I love him.
Lovely.
Going on there. But no, like, and no more than that, I suppose I struggled a little bit with it. I remember playing, I was brought onto the intercounty scene with Davy Fitz, and I remember playing below in a league game in Nolan Park in Kilkenny. And, you know, there was a lot of fear there, and I just struggled with coping with that, I suppose. I remember actively I was on a guy playing corner forward, and he was definitely getting the better of me after the first few balls. And I remember actively looking to the sideline, looking to the to see when the board was going to come up for me to be taken off. And that's what happened. I'd say after 48 or 49 minutes, you know, that's the way it panned out. So struggled to get into a team and struggled, I suppose, to nail down any sort of a place then and get a bit of momentum going for championship action, you know?
Yeah. So injuries at particular times played a part, and then obviously just the standards around you as well. When somebody gets their chance, it can be hard to take it back off them. I suppose I'm wondering what you put it down to, the change that has gone on from that maybe misfortune and tension, which really I think maybe from what you've studied around sport as well, you'd probably accept that often that misfortune is only a reflection or a projection of stuff that's going on inside. Like you have an unsettledness inside, that's the things in your life around you that don't seem connected to those internal things are actually impacted by your own uncertainty. And then there has to be at some stage a shift in your internal state for a different external world to kind of just start to flow, this flow that you've unquestionably found in your play. And I mean, it's been an absolute joy to watch. I have to say, from knowing you, it's been a joy to watch you on the ball, not because Clare are in advancement or not because of any story around the intercounty game, but just for to see a fella going from uncertainty into composure and relaxedness and certainty is a real joy, because I suppose it gives hope to everybody who is uncertain. That you can actually change something internally, maybe it's internal, I'm not sure, there's a wide variety of ideas on that, but that you can make some kind of shift internally for that external world to change.
Yeah, and for sure, I think even if you were to look within my own club, and I'd say people that would have looked at me over those few years would have said, he's, you know, he's quite uptight. He thinks a lot about the game, but he's probably a tad harsh on himself. And I think that was definitely the case.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a number of factors to it. I know my girlfriend Sarah, you know, we made the decision in 2019 to take a little break from the scene and to head away traveling. And we went away for 4 months, which was unbelievable and enriching to see how, you know, other people live and, you know, different cultures and different parts of the world. And
context, like you get context, don't you? You get 100%, context.
Yeah, 100%. And you're down in, I remember I messaged Colin O'Riordan with Sydney Swans down in Australia. And, you know, he was open to me coming in to see a training session. And there was other times then that I was, you know, we were in Southeast Asia and you're seeing how different people live and it gives great, I suppose it really broadened my world anyway, in terms of what was there. The same year I came back around February time, just before COVID was kicking in, and I decided I was going to embark on the Masters in Performance Psychology, which was a big step to do everything in 1 year. I probably came back in February to Ireland with about a fiver in my bank. But in a way I needed to do that, Gizzy, to really find what I wanted to do, essentially. I remember we were actually talking about it over dinner yesterday, and I was saying I still had in the back of my mind that little bit of an itch. In August 2019, I started talking to Adrian O'Brien, who would have been involved with the Clare senior or the Limerick senior footballers this year.
Yeah.
His son Shane would be in Art School Reach with us and was one of our main players this year. Brilliant guy. And I spoke to Adrian and I just said, look, my body has been in real trouble for the last few years, and can you help me out? And I really kind of believed in what he was doing. He was working with some of the best guys in Australia, in terms of functional movement and strength and conditioning. And I just latched on, and he started sending me on weekly programs. And wherever I was, I used to send on the images of the gyms where I was. So I was out in the Philippines and it was 35 degrees and I was still following the program away. Just and with no real look, I had an intention to come back with, obviously to come back fit with Balier. Always had an itch in the back of my head saying, you know, what if, and what if you got yourself into the best possible shape you could, see what would happen.
And do you put it down, I suppose, that's what I'm interested in. Do you put it down to, like, there's the physical preparation and the work you did with Adrian, but then there's also the itch, the question, yeah, or the decision, I think, because it's not a question, it has to be a decision at some stage where you say, I'm going to be in the best shape that I can be to give myself the best opportunity possible.
I think with all athletes and with people in general, what I find is that if you can put the environment around yourself that little bit more and build it around yourself, so obviously, you know, delving into those performance techniques in terms of the masters, looking at things like, I would have never thought that things like visualization, meditation would feature any way in my life whatsoever. I would have been the same as the next fella going, ah, come here. What do you mean? You sit down in the morning time and you go outside and you take in your surroundings and you breathe. And like,
listening to Tony Griffin, no?
I would have looked at Griff for years and said, Tony, man, you're mental, like. I would have said it openly to him, and like we'd have great fun going over and back like that. But
yeah,
no, on a serious note, I would have seen building in those little bits into my own environment as helping an awful lot.
Yeah.
And also then there's the other side, Gizzy. I've seen the benefit of them through the evidence. So like, I got that through the performance psychology course that I did in UL, and you're really seeing the back end of the evidence that backs that work up. So that kind of emphasizes it more to me that, yeah, you know what, this is what the top guys are using, and it probably I suppose copper fastened what I was doing. Yeah.
Yeah. It quietens the cynic when you see the results. If somebody else has achieved it, your own inner cynic, you just can't listen to it as much because it's like, well, here's the results of it.
Yeah.
Have you listened much to Johnny Wilkinson, Paul? It's a bit of a roundabout one, but I'd be interested in terms of the critic and understanding that. I was listening to him a couple of weeks ago with a fella called Rupert Spear. I'm not sure if you came across that particular podcast.
Yeah, and there was another one. He was on the High Performance podcast last year, and he spoke of how he, if he looked back on himself now, that he would have probably tried to change a couple of things that he was very much, and I know Ron O'Gara spoke about it recently as well, looking back on himself and saying, look, that was the environment I was brought up in.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that, and being very harsh in terms of his structure and nearly his life overall. Now I probably still have the question that, you know, that brought him to a certain level, and I would say that without a doubt, you know, someone could be listening to this and say, it's easy say those things, of course, performance environment, like building it around yourself is incredibly powerful, and those things, as I said, like those performance techniques are, I would see them as essential to me now, and that's just everyday life. It's not to do with hurling either.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you would still have the question with Johnny and say, you know, there is that element of pushing yourself to the brink as well, and I think there is still a bit of that, like that I know myself, and it's probably a side of myself that I've had to push a bit more, is that selfish side, to know that like these are the things you have to put in place for you to have that energy day in, day out. Yeah. And like I maintain, I you know, I've said that to some of our younger guys as well, that it's not a case of putting your hand up a lot of the time and saying, I'll play well in this game and you'll pick me. A lot of the time you've got to be playing well for a course of 1 or 2 years, maybe even 3 years, before someone might pick you.
Yeah.
Because it's that consistency over time that stands out. And we can see that all with the best teams. So I suppose there's a there's a combination of a lot of things there that feed into the overall athlete.
One of the things that I found very interesting that he talked about, and it was only from pure observation and anecdotal evidence, was around performance and the tension. There's a sequence, a cycle, or a rhythm coming into a game where we have tension, like the tension that you spoke about, and the uncertainty. And then you play the game, and let's say you play well, or you get the last score, or whatever, and you win, and there is a tendency to mistake that release of tension as joy, but that's not what joy is. That's just the release of tension. Joy is doing the things that you want to do all of the time, independent of a little bit like you were saying there a second ago, like it's not necessarily about playing well one day. It's about doing the things excellently to the standards you want to do, because that's what you've decided, not because it's in a bubble, but because you've actually decided this is what I want to do with my life. These are the sacrifices that I'm not going to even call sacrifices, because they're just what I want to do, and I'm going to do those things as well as I can. And definitely there's something about the Kilkenny team that I feel that they get this right, and that's what the spirit that Brian Cody often talks about is around the willingness to just keep doing it keep doing the thing that you want to do at the standard that you want to do it. And that's where you move out of that cycle of tension, release of tension, and move more into like, this is actually, and this is what you're playing with, it seems to me, is you're playing with much more joy, and it's bringing about much more composure, and you're making the right choices and you're doing the right thing. That's what it looks like to me. But now it might be reading too much into it, but it struck me looking at you this year.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point though. And trying to find that bit more balance in your play is huge, and balance overall in your life is a massive thing. I think you're right that like we all tie ourselves up in results. Like sport is a results based business. Like that, I was in Ganey's pub yesterday, and to watch the Unbridled Joy with Sean O'Shea getting that last minute point. Like sport brings us those magic moments, and but at the same time, in the nature of it is that it's results based, and you know, coaches do look to try and get those results. But you're 100% right, Gizzy, that I think you've got to fall back into the what you do that gets you there. And I think that I'd probably look at games now and look for more in terms of where you can get your own game to, and look for the plays and the pieces that can improve you. Like I really enjoyed talking to other players as well, and finding out small little nuggets of what they do. I give this example to a couple of our younger lads. Like I remember it was about the time I started working with Adrian, and I gave Paul Mannion, that was playing football with the Dubs, obviously, I gave him a quick message. I know that he had gone vegan in terms of the way that he was eating, and I was just interested to see like how he was balancing, how he was getting enough protein in essentially, and how he was doing that, and just give him a quick message on Instagram, and Paul, in fairness to him, he got back and just sent me on a few things that he does and how he gets his supplementation of protein in through natural means. So again, like just a small thing, but I suppose it was my own, it like at the time I was just doing it to see could I improve that tiny little bit. And yeah, a small little nugget from a player like that, and you say, yeah, you know what, that's something I could build into my own routine. And I think that's
Have you gone fully vegan?
Not quite.
I didn't think so.
A lot of my mother was quite worried there for a while. Like she's looking at me, and I was eating an awful lot of oats, a lot of lettuce, a lot of greens, and she's often the question, are you eating enough? But I suppose between the spread of everything, I definitely probably aren't. I'm not, my diet wouldn't be the same as what it was. We've a brilliant nutritionist with us with Claire, and you know, things that you need to include, for instance, even the real warm games that we had there, and just adding that little bit more salt to your diet, because typically, like, I wouldn't eat that much salt anyway within, because you'd be trying to eat it pretty healthy on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, a lot of oats. Yeah. Someone said, like, you could be blowing Aidan O'Brien or Joseph or one of those, or Willie Mullins. You're eating so much oats, but yeah.
Yeah, it was working for them. There was a line that stuck out, and it's a tough one in some respects, but I read that quote, it couldn't happen to a nicer fella, and it came up a few times, and that was the, like, obviously you're marked out as a leader from early on, and you obviously, from your commitment to the young people around you, to your club, to your area, all of those things, couldn't happen to a nicer fella. And it sat with me, it couldn't happen to a nicer fella. And there's something about in those earlier days of being a nice fella, and but not having, I think, I don't know, is it Nietzsche talked about, like, the distrust of a man who doesn't know his darkness, like, you know, that you have to find where there is that little bit of a cut in you to then act in your life, not from that place, but knowing that it's there and understanding it and not letting it rule you, or not letting it, you know, flash out in moments of anger or whatever. But it forms a more complete player, instead of just being a nice fella, but to also know that, like, well, I'm also, I can also be that, but I just don't need to be it. And again, there's something in the certainty of your play and in the physicality of your play now that's come in, that there is that more of an edge. And I think that playing with that edge it breeds confidence. It breeds confidence in the simple things that you do, not just in tackles or not in fights or nothing like that. It's just to know that it's there, but you don't need to draw on it if you don't need it.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, actually, and it's probably like my mother and Sarah were sitting down reading the article before the Munster final. I hadn't seen it, obviously, and they were having a look at it, and they told me afterwards about the line of a nice fella, and it's probably something that doesn't sit too well with me. Like, sure. I can totally get the connotation of it, but I think you do need to have that bit of cut in you to be able to perform and to be able to see what needs to be done, I suppose. I remember a good few years ago now, we were training underage, and Tony Kelly's dad, Donald, would have been over a good few of our teams underage, and he actually had a hat, and on the hat it was in Balier colours, so it was in black and amber, but in the amber colours on the hat were "nice boys win nothing." I could be being very genuine. I could be a bit too genuine there, but it was "nice boys win F all," I think was the actual term. Something along those lines. But I know it's a small thing, but in a way, it does ring true in some ways, you know.
I think it's in the subtleties. I mean, I think it's in decisions like being selfish. Like, I think it comes out in somewhere like that, like, you know, where you said, you know, you kind of selfishly build your world, and if you're in the nice guy pleasing everybody, you're always looking outside for some kind of fulfillment, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, hang on there, everything that I was looking for is actually inside. So what I need to do is I need to protect that. So I'm going to build a few walls here, and I'm going to implement these things, because that's what nourishes what's inside the walls, as opposed to looking outside for them. And so it's in small decisions like that, from realizing that that's where it's protecting that core. I think that's what, I suppose that's what I was thinking with it couldn't happen to a nicer fella, and I see where it's it's a perfectly plausible and delightful thing to want for any young fella to be a nice fella who looks after, you know, the upcoming generations and does those things. And it's not to say that those things are, you shouldn't do those things or you shouldn't be that because you don't want to be a nice fella. It's not that. It's something much more primal and much more internal that I think it references. And it's just, yeah, it stuck out to me, I suppose. The toll of the Limerick game on the Clare panel this year, to bring it back to, I know we went off on a different tangent, but how when you're looking back at the year now, what was the toll of that game on your year, do you think?
Yeah, it was, and I know it's been referenced this week a little bit as well. Like the Munster final was a huge game. I think obviously this year, look, we'd 6 or 7 championship games. The Munster final landed in the middle there. It was a 90-minute game. We were probably looking at, it's definitely the most intense game that I've played in. Mm. And I suppose I can only speak for myself on that. I know that, like, there was huge intensity within the game. I remember waking up on Monday morning after the game and saying, like, that's as close, I have, touch wood, I haven't been in any small traffic accident or anything like that, but I just remember waking up and saying that was like, I nearly have a case of whiplash here after the hits in that game. Particularly the way that it flowed, like, as in John Keenan let the game go, and it was a, you know, an amazing spectacle for everyone. I think, yeah, the toll of it was intense, like, more that I would say in terms of, you know, GPS stats were through the roof. You're probably talking 16-17k for some guys over 90 minutes, which is huge. A good bit above what we would have done. But at the same time, you get down to brass tacks, then you recover. The one way I would look at it is that we don't play that many games within a year. You play, again, like that, we've played 6 to 7 games. We to get down and get recovered for the Wexford game 2 weeks later. But again, of course, it was a hugely intensive game and did have some bit of a toll on us, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Looking forward to the weekend, I suppose you faced against both teams. I think probably Kilkenny are a different animal now than when maybe it met earlier on the year. What way do you see them lining up?
Yeah, they've certainly improved. I think their 4-week run into the semi-final, and we know that from years gone by, that
this is what they do.
This is what they do. Yeah, they're brilliant at getting that run in right, and they certainly did against us. Look, their team, they're stacked with quality. They move really well, actually. They move really well in terms of the rotation of forwards. Obviously they're outstanding in the air and they have a really compact defence. But I think that rotation of forwards is definitely something that they can cause trouble.
I always thought playing against them that they'd have the, you know, the black and amber jersey, obviously, but there was, like, I don't know, was there 4 or 5 of them with black helmets? And you'd be thinking, like, they're marking him, and all of a sudden you're flashing. These are instants. You see a black helmet, and all of a sudden you're going over there, and it's like, Jesus, I'm on the wrong fella altogether. And somebody else is wide open, 20 yards of space. Like, but they were always chopping and always playing with your mind a little bit, always chopping and changing, always ghosting. When you get lost in the ball, like, they'd take you for 20 yards. And Adrian Mullen seems to have definitely worked that out of just creating space out of nowhere. Haven't seen Limerick so, like, he pushed them as hard as they've been pushed. Do you see them relenting, or is there one big play left in them this year?
And again, like, Limerick are really structured, I suppose, and you know the way they're going to set up, and they do that. But, you know, one thing I was reading there a couple of weeks ago was in terms of confidence, and confidence is essentially small things done in a really great way. And I think, you know, Limerick are a superb team and they do that really, really well. Like, we all know maybe their structure, their slight subtleties to it.
But there's no better, is there a better team in the last 20 years to do the small things brilliantly than Kilkenny? I mean,
oh, 100%. Like, you can see some real crossover in terms of the traits of both.
Yeah.
I probably, in terms of how much, you know, Limerick can hurt you at times, moving more towards those in terms of what they can do and in terms of what they might have to come back into it, will be quite interesting next week. But then again, Kilkenny always seem to find a gear, and they're never too far out of a game, which is a huge thing that they have built into their game.
Yeah.
Which is great to see as well.
Yeah. Look, I know from talking to Siobhan there that it's another cracker in West Kerry. So I let you back to it. You've only got a few hours left to get out into the sun and maybe get into the Atlantic before you head up home. Thanks very much for coming on and for giving us that bit of time, especially when you're on a bit of a break, Paul. Pleasure to talk to you, and congratulations on the year that you've had. I know Claire didn't maybe get to the final leg and get into the final, but you're certainly headed in the right direction again anyway, and you've been a pleasure to watch, and definitely on a personal level it's been a pleasure to watch you as well, and watch you perform. So fair play to you for getting that balance right and for giving the hope to the people who don't always get it right and are looking for just those little edges. And hopefully we'll chat to you again. Thanks very much, Paul.
Magic Dermot Garmat.
Fighter Opie. That's all we've got time for. We'll be back next week with a review of the All-Ireland final between Kilkenny and Limerick. Join us then.
You're listening to the GAA Hour with Diarmaid Ling on Sports Joe.
Donald Donovan is the left cornerback. He hits it. What? It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses. What a match.
There's been a missing person in Clare for 81 long years. Well, today, that person has been found alive and well, and that person's name is Liam McCarthy.
They know as much about serious level sport as I know about the sleeping habits of the Ayatollah.
There's a streaker on the ground now. He must be a Kilkenny man because he's quite happy with the situation right now.